President Biden lauds the sacrifice of American troops who died fighting for freedom.
Every year we remember, and every year it never gets easier.
Plus, another sleepless night for residents in the Ukrainian capital Monday.
It was really unexpected that another attack happened just 6 hours after the night.
And Uganda's president signs one of the world's toughest anti-LGBTQ laws that includes the death penalty in some cases. Today is Tuesday, May 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning. I'm Lori London in Washington. President Joe Biden honored the sacrifice of generations of American troops and their families who died fighting for their country with a Memorial Day ceremony Monday at Arlington National Cemetery. Associated Press correspondent Julie Walker reports.
After laying a wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier at Arlington National Cemetery, President Biden said, "Every year we remember, and every year it never gets easier."
"We must never forget the price that was paid to protect our democracy. We must never forget the lives these flags, flowers, and marble markers represent."
It's been almost 2 years since Biden ended the U.S.'s longest war in Afghanistan. The president has taken pride that his administration has overseen a time of relative peace for the U.S. military. I'm Julie Walker.
The president and first lady were departing the White House later Monday to return to their home near Wilmington, Delaware. He told reporters he feels good about the prospects for passage by Congress of the debt ceiling deal that he reached with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy.
"There is no reason why it shouldn't get done by the 5th. I'm confident that we'll get a vote in both houses. And we'll see."
The 99-page bill produced from their agreement Sunday would avoid a federal default while limiting government spending, but the two leaders still have to persuade lawmakers to pass the bill. Explosions rattled Kyiv during the daylight hours Monday as Russian ballistic missiles fell on the Ukrainian capital. The barrage came hours after a more common nighttime attack on the city by drones and cruise missiles. Debris from missiles intercepted by Ukrainian air defenses fell Monday morning in Kyiv's central and northern districts. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv discussed it on VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine.
"It was a combined attack of missiles and drones. So again, people didn't sleep over the night. It stopped at 5 o'clock in the morning, so people went to sleep at around 5 o'clock in the morning. And then around noon, another air raid siren was on. But then in around 5 minutes, it was a huge, powerful explosion. And again, people ran to the shelter, and you even can find some footage of children running to the shelter from the streets, because it was really unexpected that another attack would happen just 6 hours after the night attack."
Officials said missile fragments landed in traffic on a city road and started a fire on the roof of a building. Meanwhile, Russia has issued an arrest warrant for a U.S. senator. Associated Press correspondent Rita Foley has that part of the story.
Russia wants to arrest Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina after what he said about the war in Ukraine. Graham met with Ukraine's President Zelensky on Friday. Zelensky's office later released an edited video in which Senator Graham says the Russians are dying and describes U.S. military assistance to Ukraine as the best money we've ever spent. Senator Graham appears to have made the remarks at different times in the conversation, but the short video by Ukraine's presidential office put them next to each other. It caused outrage in Russia. The Russian Interior Ministry then issued the arrest warrant. I'm Rita Foley.
Sudan's warring factions agreed on Monday to a 5-day extension of a ceasefire agreement after renewed heavy clashes and airstrikes in the capital threw fresh doubts on the effectiveness of a truce designed to ease a humanitarian crisis. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan won Sunday's presidential runoff, giving him a third term in power. His victory comes despite an ailing economy and criticism over the handling of devastating earthquakes. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
On the streets of Istanbul, Recep Tayyip Erdogan's presidential runoff victory over challenger Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu was welcomed by some. like Istanbul resident Mehmet, who wanted to be identified only by his first name.
Normal, yeah. Genelde beklenilen bir sonuçtu zaten.
He said it's a normal result, a good result. That is what we hoped for. The first round had already determined the result. By the second round, we knew the outcome beforehand. It's going to be good for our country. But with Turkey facing soaring inflation and a weakening currency, for others, the result is fueling fear of what is next, says Istanbul resident Uskun, who only wanted to be identified by his first name.
Ekonomi olsun, şey olsun. Biraz sıkıntı çok büyük.
He said the problems are so big, whether it's the economy or other things. Let me tell you, this is not something that will be fixed in just 2 days. It will not be solved easily. Part of the problem is the people themselves. They only think about their own interests. The election was widely touted as Erdogan's toughest, with Turkey grappling with 40% plus inflation and widespread condemnation over the handling of February's earthquakes. But the quake-struck region gave Erdogan some of his strongest support, with backers celebrating his victory deep into the night. A remarkable result, analysts say, given challenger Kılıçdaroğlu's more generous campaign promises over rehousing quake victims. Can Selçuk'i is the head of the Istanbul Economics Research, an opinion poll company.
Mr. Erdogan said that they would rebuild and sell the houses. Mr. Kılıçdaroğlu said they would rebuild and give them away for free. And looking at the results, people believed Erdogan more than Kılıçdaroğlu. So I would say it's a widespread notion.
On news of his victory, Erdogan sang to his supporters, vowing he would be with them until the grave. Some observers say that given Erdogan has never been more powerful, he could already be planning to abolish presidential term limits as part of constitutional reform plans. Hüseyin Bağcı is the head of the Foreign Policy Institute, an Ankara-based research organization.
Secure and stronger, certainly, for another 5 years. Even I do expect that he will try to extend his presidential period like Putin, like Xi Jinping, maybe forever. He has the parliamentary majority. I do think that he will do this, a constitutional change that he can apply for another term.
But Erdogan faces formidable challenges, with the Turkish leader's vow to continue his unorthodox economic policies, which are widely blamed for soaring inflation and a weakening currency. Some analysts warn financial turmoil could be looming. Erdogan's commitment to further deepen relations with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, also threatens to further strain ties with Turkey's Western allies. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
North Korea says it will launch its first military reconnaissance satellite in June for live monitoring of U.S. military activities. Last week, South Korean and U.S. forces began live fire exercises, simulating a full-scale attack from North Korea in what they said were the biggest such drills to demonstrate their overwhelming military capability against Pyongyang's threats. More from VOA's Bill Gallo, who reports from Pochon, South Korea, near the militarized zone.
Peace through overwhelming strength. That's the message from South Korea's military as its weapons pound a mountainside not far from the border with North Korea. This is the biggest live fire exercise the United States and South Korea have ever held, having become much more comfortable showing off their weapons in recent months. The South Korean military is calling this an annihilation drill. They've invited dozens of foreign and local media, meaning the audience is both in North and South Korea. For years, drills like this were held away from the public eye. Now, hundreds of civilians are invited to watch the show. It's a message of reassurance for South Koreans, says analyst Bong Young-sik.
To provide visible evidence to the eyes of South Korean public who have not seen the joint military exercises for the past 5 years.
The drills were scaled back during peace negotiations in 2018. When those talks broke down, North Korea started launching more missiles than ever. New leaders in Washington and Seoul have now decided on a tougher approach. Again, Bong Young-sik.
Based upon the disappointing result for the past 5 years, South Korea and the United States reached the conclusion that only missiles would make North Koreans to think twice.
That hasn't stopped North Korea from building better weapons and issuing more threats. Kim recently vowed to launch a spy satellite and may conduct a nuclear test. South Korea and the United States say they will also continue their drills, meaning the Korean Peninsula likely will not be quiet anytime soon. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Pochon, South Korea.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Israeli forces killed a Palestinian security officer during clashes in the occupied West Bank flashpoint city of Jenin on Monday, according to the Palestinian Fatah faction. The Israeli military said its forces had come under heavy Palestinian fire while seeking the arrest of security suspects and had returned fire at the gunman. South America's leaders will gather in Brazil's capital Tuesday as part of President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva's attempt to reinvigorate regional integration efforts that have previously floundered amid the continent's political swings and polarization. Lula said at a news conference Monday that the leaders should discuss cooperation in energy and crime fighting. And a wildfire in the eastern Canadian city of Halifax has led to mandatory evacuation orders for thousands of homes, and officials said residents will not be allowed to return until advised by municipal authorities. Halifax Mayor Mike Savage said the evacuations impacted about 18,000 people. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
A team of scientists led by researchers at the University of Toronto has found a new way to specifically target and eliminate a major threat to our food supply without harming the environment. A pesticide with the research team's newly discovered chemical compound called Selectivin targets plant parasitic nematodes, or PPNs. PPNs are tiny and almost invisible worms that kill plants and cause what some experts estimate to be $77 billion of crop damage each year. In a University of Toronto release, only 7 nematicides have been developed in recent years, but their use has been mostly restricted or banned in many countries because of the harm they can cause to people and plants. As a result, farmers were left without an effective way to fight these destructive pests. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. Gay activists in Uganda are calling for a repeal of the Anti-Homosexuality Act signed into law Monday by the country's president. Critics say the law, which allows life imprisonment and the death penalty in some cases, is draconian and the world's harshest anti-gay law. Amnesty International says the act is a violation of the Constitution and expressed hopes the courts will declare it illegal. Halima Athumani has the story from Kampala, Uganda.
President Museveni's signing of the Anti-Homosexuality Act of 2023 on Monday has left members of Uganda's LGBTQ community in shock. The new law calls for up to 20 years in prison for promoting homosexuality and life imprisonment for anyone convicted of homosexuality. The law also imposes a death penalty for what it calls aggravated homosexuality. This includes having sex with people categorized as vulnerable, including the elderly and children. Any Ugandan who does not report such cases is liable on conviction to spend 5 years in prison or pay a fine of 10 million Ugandan shillings, about $2,680. Also, journalists and other media figures will face 5 years in prison if they disclose the identity of a homosexual victim without the authority of the court or that person. Eric Ndaula is executive director of the Lifeline Youth Empowerment Center, an NGO in Kampala that provides support to Ugandans who are gay, bisexual, or queer. He tells VOA that the LGBTQ community is frightened over what will come next.
I am very scared, honestly. It was expected, but it came very abrupt today morning to just wake up to such news. We are still working together as the convening of equality to see our next step forward, but the news has just shocked us.
In April, Parliament passed the Anti-Homosexuality Act on a vote of 341-1. In a statement Monday, Parliament Speaker Anita Among said lawmakers heeded the concerns of Ugandans and legislated to protect the sanctity of the family. Among urged authorities to enforce the law in what she called a fair, steadfast, and firm manner. Amnesty International has described the law as draconian and says it hopes that Ugandan rights groups will advocate for its repeal. Roland Ebole, Amnesty International's regional researcher, spoke to VOA via phone.
We hope that we will continue working with rights groups to push or challenge, especially parliamentarians, to repeal this abhorrent law. I know the second option is very unlikely, considering that this was passed by a very large majority. So perhaps our hope right now is the court, that the court will actually look at this law and see that it really is a violation on human rights.
International bodies that operate in Uganda, such as UNAIDS and USAID, have previously stated that the passing of the Anti-Homosexuality Act will not only complicate their work in Uganda, but reverse the gains made by Uganda in the fight against HIV/AIDS. Halima Athmani for VA News. Kampala.
The Memorial Day holiday in the U.S. marks the unofficial start of the summer season. Post-pandemic travel has been on the rise, and this summer could see record numbers of people wanting to get away, but it will come with a bigger price tag. I spoke with Pauline Frommer, editorial director for Frommers.com and Frommer's Travel Guides. What are you seeing and expecting for the summer travel season?
Travel came back with a bang last year, and we are seeing even higher interest in travel this year. All of the booking engines are reporting record numbers of people going on them and searching and booking airfares and hotels and other travel products. So the question now is, can the airlines handle this? We know that some of them have put themselves in a good position. For example, Delta hired, I think it was 25,000 new staffers. That's a quarter of their current workforce. So they should be doing okay. Whether or not Southwest has had the time to solve their problems, which had to do with an outdated tech system, remains to be seen. But the dirty little secret about the summer is people think of winter as being the time for storms and storm delays. The fact is there are more storm delays and cancellations in summer because it's harder for meteorologists to know when a storm will come up in summer. They can see snowstorms several days out, and so the airlines can move the planes to the places they need to be. But summer storms often catch everyone off guard. And we know that weather experts are already predicting an unusually hot summer, and often with heat comes more storms. So that's what I'm really worried about.
Interesting. Are you seeing people going on international trips overseas, or are they staying in the U.S.?
Oh, yeah. We're seeing a lot more people trying to go international. Part of the problem has been this year a record number of people have been applying for passports or applying to renew their passports because a lot of the people let them expire during the pandemic since nobody was traveling. And the passport office has really been unable to handle the surge in people trying to contact it. Right now, if you need to expedite your passport renewal or expedite getting one for the first time, there is a phone system you have to call to make an appointment, and the phone system is so overwhelmed, it's just hanging up on people. It's been crazy. The passport agency is expecting 26 million Americans to either get a new passport or to renew one this year, and they're understaffed.
What about prices? It sounds like they're also going to be paying more to travel this year.
Yeah, prices are way up. I'm right now editing Frommer's Maui, the next version of it, and I was looking at the previous version, which was pre-pandemic, and prices for hotels have doubled in Maui. And so I contacted the author just to make sure there wasn't a problem, and she told me that because there's so much understaffing still at hotels. A lot of hoteliers there keeping their occupancy rates at 50 or 60% because they feel they can't do more with the staff they have. And to make up the difference, they're charging a lot of money. And we're seeing that in other destinations too. Hotel rates are very, very high. Airfares are high. They're higher than they were in 2019. So it's going to be an expensive year to travel.
And are you seeing any specific part of the world that people are really focused on going, or is it just pretty much across the board? People are just wanting to get out and away.
We're seeing people wanting to get out. You know, at the height of the pandemic, nature became everybody's obsession. Everybody wanted to go outdoors because it was easier to social distance that way. And that love of nature still seems to be in place. So we're expecting record numbers once again at national parks, at state parks, at other nature sites. But that's just the beginning. People are going everywhere. People just want to get out. And I think during the pandemic, we all learned that life is short and that sometimes life puts you in a place you don't want to be. And if you want to travel, you need to do it when you have an opportunity to do so.
Pauline Frommer, editorial director for Frommers.com and the Frommers Guidebooks. And for folks not traveling over the holiday weekend in the U.S., some took their kids to the movies. And as Associated Press entertainment correspondent Margie Sarzaletta reports, The Little Mermaid was the top attraction at the box office.
You went to the above world.
A man was drowning. I had to save him.
The live-action remake of The Little Mermaid easily was the biggest draw for moviegoers. It earned $95.5 million in North American theaters, according to studio estimates. It bumps last week's number one, Fast X, down to second. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is number three. The Super Mario Brothers movie takes fourth place with The Machine at number five. I'm Margie Zaraletta.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
There is little doubt that Russia's illegal attack on Ukraine has had negative repercussions across the globe. Even countries that are not involved in the war have suffered. The invasion caused a massive and historic energy shock to global markets and was one of the main factors that had slowed last year's economic growth to just 3.1%. According to a report issued by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development in November 2022, far more serious are the consequences suffered by those in need of food aid. As parts of Africa and the Middle East face an unprecedented food crisis, Russia severely hampered Ukraine's capacity to grow food and ship it from its Black Sea ports. But of course, no one has suffered more than Ukraine's civilian populations, under deliberate attack by Russia's military throughout the war. Over the past 14 months, the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights recorded nearly 24,000 civilian casualties. However, the UNHCR notes that the actual figures are certainly considerably higher. No one is paying more dearly than Ukraine, said Robert Wood, United States Alternate Representative for Special Political Affairs at the United Nations. After 15 months, we are no closer to ending the humanitarian suffering caused by Russia's unprovoked war against Ukraine. Instead, the death toll rises from Russia's missile and drone strikes on Ukraine's civilian population centers.
From May 1 through 4, Russia launched more than 145 airstrikes across Ukraine. That translates into an average of more than one missile, drone, or bomb every hour, 24 hours a day, 3 days straight. In just those 3 days alone, Russia's attacks have killed and injured more than 100 civilians, including at least 5 children.
At the same time, humanitarian organizations have reported worsening conditions in the frontline areas and necessities such as electricity, food, and fuel are in short supply, said Ambassador Wood.
President Putin's escalating attacks on Ukraine's critical infrastructure threaten us all. Russia has no interest in mitigating the spillover effects of its war against Ukraine just as Russia has shown no genuine interest in negotiation or meaningful diplomacy.
We again call on Russia to end its attacks on the people of Ukraine and withdraw its forces from Ukraine's territory completely, said Ambassador Wood. Russia alone has the power to end the war it senselessly started.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.